Welcome to the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I'm Kyla Daw, and I'm glad you decided to join us on today's episode of the show that is shaping how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. Rather than advice from experts, our listeners want to hear the insights and ideas from those who, just like them, are on the front lines every day, building meaningful relationships that translate into meaningful support for causes that they and their donors care about. Every week, we invite our guests to have a real conversation about what it means to be a fundraising professional. We're after a greater understanding of what it means to be one of the sector's critically important yet least understood roles, while giving honest answers to our profession's most difficult questions. Thank you for joining us in this episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Here's your host, author, fundraiser, and master trainer, Jason Lewis.
Hi, podcast listeners. This is Jason Lewis, and I am your host for the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I want to thank you for dialing in today for the show that is shaping the way that the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. Before I introduce today's guest, I want to remind everyone that the fall dates for the How Fundraising Really Works Roadshow are confirmed. You can find those dates on my website at lewisfundraising.com/events. Our next stop will be in New York City on Thursday, October 10th. We are very grateful to Jennifer Kearney and the entire advancement team at the Gateway School for generously volunteering their beautiful location just blocks from Lincoln Center and Central Park. Keep in mind that seating is limited to 40 and we are expecting to sell out for this particular event. If you would like more information about this upcoming event at the Gateway School in New York City, please go to my website at lewisfundraising.com/events. Without further ado, I do want to introduce my guest today. Chad, I'm delighted that you're on the show with me. Would you mind just introducing yourself and let's have a conversation?
Well, thank you for having me, Jason. I'm excited for it as well. And my name is Chad. I'm the Vice President of Development at DuPage Pads in Northern Illinois.
So, Chad, I'm going to be with you and Abby and some other folks up there in Chicago in a couple next week, actually. And I wanted to check in with you, and we're going to check in with some other folks here later this afternoon. So tell me a little bit about this event that I'm a part of and why it matters, and then we'll deep dive into some things that you and I share some common opinions about.
Absolutely. So the Naperville Area Chamber of Commerce is a 5-star accredited chamber that serves all of the greater western suburbs of Chicago, Illinois. And the chamber has a nonprofit group. It's the nonprofit network that I serve as the chair of the advisory committee for. And we're always looking to engage our audience of about 90 plus different nonprofit memberships in how we can continue to further the thinking of philanthropy. And that comes in tangible business techniques. That comes in social networking, that comes in major topics and smaller topic issues that are more specific to our area. So when we plan out these events, we're always looking for speakers who can come in and provide us with a different point of view, a different voice, some different thoughts that we can then consider together and continue to use to move philanthropy forward. And I had the pleasure of meeting you through a mutual friend, Jason, last year, where we engaged in some real thought-provoking conversation that we wanted to open up to an even wider audience next Friday to be able to talk about. I think the upcoming topic of yours is the messy middle lane that we're going to explore together.
Yeah. So, Chad, one of the things that I like to know ahead of time, and I have spent some time in the Chicago area and out in the suburbs where you guys are at, but just as a refresher, what does a guy like me who's coming in to give advice to a large metropolitan area like you all are, one of the things I know is that the suburbs out there in Naperville and others, I mean, Naperville essentially functions at its own larger city, does it not? It's
one of the 5 largest in the state.
Yeah. So refresh my memory on sort of what I need to understand before I'm speaking to an audience like yours.
Well, the unique thing about this particular group within the chamber is that we have some nonprofits that are focused in higher ed, some that are focused in medical, some that are focused in social services, and then some very unique ones around the arts or even the community television station, which does a ton of nonprofit work. And so when you have this many different segments of your audience all together under one roof, you want to be able to create a conversation that really can be individualized to the different segments of the audience, but also has a main through line of consistent practices that everyone can improve, kind of that old adage of the rising tide, that we want to see all ships raised together. So what we seek to do with this annual nonprofit breakfast is put some subject matter to it that will help to make the individual and the individual agencies stronger and more compelling and competitive at their jobs, but also raise the voice within the community itself of how nonprofits are shaping what the needs of our community are and addressing them in a way that we can all improve and have a healthier, better life for it.
So if you were in my spot next week and you're talking to the, let's say he or she is a young, you know, 2 or 3 years into their fundraising career, and they're saying, can I really do this? Do I want to stay here in Naperville and do this type of work? What sort of advice are you giving them?
Really looking at how the work translates. So with the upcoming generation of those working in philanthropy and fund development, they want to have a sense of how it can become relevant to their lives. We see a lot more, even in for-profit communities, employers are trying to address the individual's motivation as to what their role has for the impact of the greater good or the greater bottom line. And so I think particularly with this audience, we want to make sure that they're in tune with themselves, that they understand how fundraising can be an effective tool to accomplish something the same way that we would steward donors to feel connected to our mission, and then make sure that that mission is tangible to them in a way that they can really feel that they are part of the outcome, that they have a value in that system. And whether that's a small non-for-profit with, you know, 10 employees or a larger one with up to 150 or more, making sure they know that there is a purpose there, that they're serving a social or societal change, particularly if they're working in fundraising, because that is one of the higher stressful areas, as you well know, just looking at the article that you participated in with quite a few others in the Chronicle of Philanthropy last month, which was an excellent read.
Thank you. Yeah, that was a good one. Yes. So Chad, one of the things that I've been thinking a lot about is this idea that the younger fundraisers come into the work very differently than anyone, say, my age or older. And I think they come in with a much greater level of positivity about the work. I don't think that young people coming into the work are nearly come in with so many of the hangups that I would say that say even myself when I came into the work 22 years ago would have had. Do you think that's particularly true of young fundraising professionals?
I would say I'm observing it right now. As we speak, I am in this unique vantage point as a Zennial, where I fall in that little bracket of 1977 to 1983, and it gives me an opportunity to come out of an analog upbringing into a digital world. Yeah. And so I'm observing those that have understood relationship-based fundraising their entire lives, that they need a face to be able to directly connect with, and those that are involved in the digital platform, where social media is revolutionizing the way that nonprofits are doing their fundraising and communicating on large-scale levels, but with smaller-level donors. So the younger fundraisers kind of landscape, if you will, is one that is full of a lot of open opportunity if they can find a way to really connect themselves to the mission and to make sure that we continue to keep the donor along for that ride, that we make sure that they sense that their involvement is not something where it's a one-time offer, you know, avoiding that attrition standpoint and really focusing on keeping donors engaged in a way where they know that their output, their involvement, whatever the case might be, whether it's a financial engagement, a volunteer engagement, or a skill engagement of some kind, really goes towards improving the success of the mission that they're becoming a part of.
Do you think they actually, do you tend to agree with me when I say that I think the younger person who grew up with more of these digital tools in their hands, more, you know, it's more first nature, even like my children now, they see technology as almost in a more holistic sort of perspective. They don't see it as a sort of a way to skirt the relationship, to avoid the relationship, but actually a way to enhance the relationship. That's where I tend to see some of the tension when two guys like you and me might be standing in front of a group and we start talking about social media. It seems to be that the older people in the room want to see it as sort of a substitute for a relationship, whereas the young person is seeing it as sort of a vehicle to get to the relationship. Does that make sense?
It does, absolutely. And I think the social aspect of that is key. If you're in an upbringing where your world has consistently had social media as a part of it, that is how you've networked, how you've learned, how you've observed the lives of others and causes that you can become affiliated with or opportunities to go out and meet as groups, then it does become kind of second nature to how you're interacting and engaging the world, that prism you see it through. Where I see oftentimes the gap become created, and that's why conversations like next week's breakfast will become so important, is that with so many different channels now for both the fundraising professional and the donor themselves to interact, you have to make sure that the brand and that the consistency stays the same across all of those channels. So that way, whether you're engaging with a peer on the same level as you, a peer who is up and coming, or a peer who is beyond you, it still feels seamless in the way you interact. And that's really where the next challenge I think we're facing is going to be. Now that the tools aren't necessarily as new anymore, it's making sure that we have created a consistent experience for all generation levels in both the professional and the donor setting to feel like they are connected with it.
So are you hiring these young people, or like what's your interaction with one of these millennial sort of these younger people? Are you hiring these people? Are these your colleagues in the office, or what's your sort of interaction with them in real time?
Yes, we are. And we're hiring for skill and skill potential. So it's not necessarily an age bracket so much as it is a skill and ability to understand and communicate within it. So we do have some millennials coming into our workforce now, both as program individuals and as development professionals. But then we've got some older individuals too that might fall into my Zennial generation or into the baby boomer generation that are moving, transitioning maybe from the for-profit world into something that's more cause-focused for them and the next season of their professional engagement before retirement. But they're still just as savvy as the millennials might be. It may not come as naturally, but the skill potential is there to be able to address and move fluidly within the different ways that we're communicating and that we are managing the data and the success, moving away from not just the activities of an agency, but to what the true outcomes are, the longer term perspective over what it is that we're trying to accomplish with our mission.
So what's your advice to the to that baby boomer who maybe doesn't assume that they're in this for maybe more than 5 or 10 more years at the most, and they're hearing from two guys like you and me who are, because I'm right there where you at. I was born in 78, so we're pretty much, you know, peers. And we sort of see the world is in both this sort of analog and digital sort of framework. But if you're the baby boomer in the room who sometimes gets frustrated with all this millennial and social media sort of buzz talk, what are you saying to them?
It's an excellent question. One that maybe I don't have the perfect answer to, but the more sophisticated that everything is becoming, not looking at one source of funding or one channel of communicating, you know, not just direct mail or phone calls or face to face anymore, but with everything as it is, I think there is something that can be learned from mutual generation experiences. So a diverse group of thinkers is going to look at everything from multiple standpoints versus, what's the saying, if everybody is a hammer, then every problem looks like a nail. You know, trying to separate out the thinking to where we can be influential to each other. Oftentimes people think of a mentor relationship as an age-based relationship where the mentor is someone older or more experienced in a particular area. And the more experienced part can be true with the younger generation as well, especially with some of these new channels that are developing themselves in the fundraising practices that we're using. So a mentor relationship that would allow for kind of a 360 approach where we can engage with someone who has maybe more on the job desk experience or is a road warrior who's been out traveling in fundraising or traveling in sales. And then the person who's 2 to 3 years into career but has a very aggressive timeline in mind for how they can get in, make an impact, learn more, attempt to do some major things in fundraising and accomplish them, has something that each can learn from and teach each other. And once we start to look at it that way, where I want to learn as much as I want to teach, I think we'll knock down some of the barriers, either assumed or realistic, between the generations and create our ability to work together more effectively.
Yeah. So before I let you go, because I've had you talking for almost 20 minutes now.
Wow, that went quick.
Yeah, you did. You've done well. You've done really well. What's your advice to that young person as they find value in what that baby boomer has to say?
Don't seek it out solely through a monitor or a phone screen or solely at your place of employment.
Yeah.
I think it's important to have some peer social circles that you can go to and talk to and have a relationship with. I myself found those experiences through service clubs, through professional affiliations, just like the one that we're getting together with, the Naperville Area Chamber of Commerce's nonprofit network, was a huge tool for me when I was first getting started into this geographic area and into fund development for being able to talk to other professionals. I found the same thing in the West Suburban Philanthropic Network, which is actually how we became acquainted, you and I, last year.
Yeah.
Those kinds of affiliation groups create almost a circle of trust, if you will, where you have some faces and some peers, both that might be executive directors, so people that are in their more senior level of leadership, but also brand new starting out too. And you can learn from both of them and develop relationships that may not have as much resistance as you would in your place of employment. But don't let that limit your thinking either. Working with even the more senior staff at your agency to create mentorship opportunities can start outside of the office, but then you can bring some of those things back in a way that you can create meaningful or thought-provoking conversations with other staff members in your agency around your mission. Those sort of opportunities to say, here's what we talked about and what I learned, and I would love for you to share with me your experiences about X, and use that as an opportunity to spring yourself forward in your professional development throughout your career.
Thanks, Chad. So remind everyone, anybody who's in the Chicago suburbs or downtown or just interested in sort of being a part of this event next week, remind us how to get there. I'll make sure to put a link in the show notes. What are some of the specifics that are important that none of us forget?
Absolutely. So we are excited to be sitting down with you at what is the non-for-profit annual breakfast in Naperville. And we're going to be discussing fundraising's messy middle lane, but I'm sure there'll be a lot more involved in that conversation. And we're doing that next Friday, the 13th, at 7:15 in the morning is our kickoff for the networking, and running the program through 9:30. It's going to be at the Doubletree Hilton Lyle, which is conveniently located right off the interstate for those that might be coming from the northern suburbs or out of the city of Chicago. And it's an open-door event. So as long as you get online and register at the Naperville Area Chamber of Commerce's website, you will be able to come and join us for what I think is going to be a very relevant and timely breakfast, and be back on the road before 10 a.m. to get to work or wherever it is you need to be next. But it's going to be a great conversation you don't want to miss.
Thanks, Chad. Looking forward to it.
We'll see you next week, Jason. Thanks for the opportunity today. Really enjoyed the conversation.
Have you read the book that nonprofit leaders and fundraising professionals alike are calling a must read? In this pocket manifesto for today's fundraising professional, Jason deconstructs why many of us find ourselves working for organizations where we cannot accomplish our goals. These same organizations are notorious for rapid turnover and high donor attrition. To avoid this all too familiar path, Jason offers direction from those who want to be recognized and admired for their work. The war for fundraising talent challenges our ingrained beliefs and assumptions about how effective fundraising really works, and it questions the prevailing wisdom hiring decisions and donor behavior. Published by Gatekeepers Press, The War for Fundraising Talent is now available on Amazon and other major retailers. We want to thank you for listening to today's episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's show and hope you will come back for next week's interview, where we will discuss with those on the front line who are defining what it means to be a fundraising professional. If you'd like to be a guest on the Fundraising Talent Podcast, visit our Facebook page or email Jason at jason@lewisfundraising.com. In your email, be sure to tell us about where you work and why you believe you would be a great addition to the upcoming lineup. Thank you again for joining us today, and we look forward to you being a part of the continuing conversation as we shape how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent.